afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with Beans. It is a Monday. We just had the little intro before the audio podcast starts. I said hello to the audience. If you guys aren't watching the show in the morning, you can catch a replay of the video if you go to Rumble, Getter, or the Platform X. Now, if any of you guys know, off of social media, Trash Discourse, he's one of my favorite guys. I love him. He shared this clip that I wanted to play for you. Some of you guys will appreciate it. I did. He said, I swear if this is not social media definitively, and it is so true. I had this interesting experience of being like stuffed into different parts of X over the weekend. I was in relationship X. I was in feminism X. I was all over the X sphere. And being in relationship X, I was so glad that I'm married. Oh my goodness, what is going on out there in the dating world right now is insane. But let's play this.
What? You've got two empty halves of coconut and you're banging them together.
So? We have ridden since the snows of winter covered this land. Through the kingdom of Mercia, through...
Where'd you get the coconuts?
We found them.
Found them? In Mercia, the coconut's tropical.
What do you mean?
Well, this is a temperate zone.
The swallow may fly south with the sun, or the house martin or the plover may seek warmer climes in winter, yet these are not strangers to our land.
Are you suggesting coconuts migrate?
Not at all. They could be carried.
What? A swallow carrying a coconut?
It could grip it by the husk.
It's not a question of where he grips it. It's a simple question of weight ratios. A 5-ounce bird could not carry a 1-pound coconut.
Well, it doesn't matter. Will you go and tell your master that Arthur from the court of Camelot is here?
Listen, in order to maintain airspeed velocity, a swallow needs to beat its wings 43 times every second, right?
Please!
Am I right?
I'm not interested.
It could be carried by an African swallow. Oh, yeah, an African swallow maybe, but not a European swallow, that's my point.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
Will you ask your master if he wants to join my court at Camelot?
But then, of course, African swallows are non-migratory.
Oh, yeah.
So they couldn't bring a coconut back anyway.
Wait a minute, supposing two swallows carried it together...
It's so true. It is so true. There's never been a better clip to explain what social media is like. Also, just so that you guys know, spamming the chat is completely disallowed. Spamming the chat with unrelated links is completely disallowed. I'm just letting you know. Anyway, now we're going to get serious. So on Friday, I think it was Friday, there was the disqualification hearing, the closing arguments in the disqualification hearing of Fannie Willis and her lover, Wade. And it was interesting to say the least. And I pulled a clip, which I sped up to 1.25 because it was just too slow otherwise, of a closing argument by an attorney for one of the defendants in this farce of a trial or case. And I want to play some clips of the judge. The judge before the hearing, the 10 minutes of this closing argument, which if you didn't know what was happening in this case, you could send this to any of your friends and they would know immediately the entire case from start. It was the most masterful closing argument I've almost ever heard myself. I'm not an attorney. I don't pretend to be one, but it went pretty viral. So I'm going to play this for you. Let's first listen to the judge before the hearing started. Okay. This is before the hearing even started. When parties wanted to open up the record again to reintroduce some other evidence, the state wanted to introduce evidence.
Now I think both sides have made requests to reopen the evidence. On behalf of the defense, there were some issues with cell phone records, and the state has found an additional witness that they would like to present. And the instruction I provided on Tuesday was that for today, I think we've reached the point where I'd like to hear more of how some of the legal arguments apply to what has already been presented. And it may already be possible for me to make a decision without those needing to be material to that decision. So that's why we're here today. I wanted to make sure we held this time because it is a bit of a logistical challenge to get everyone in a room together. But recognizing that, again, in the interest of efficiency, if both parties want to reserve part of their time to argue as if those proffered exhibits have been admitted, feel free to make whatever arguments you would like. And if, in fact, it turns out that I do need those to be part of the record to make a decision, then we'd have to come back and we will do those in accordance with the rules of evidence.
Okay. That all being said, here it is. It's going to be 10 minutes, but it's worth every second of it. You can't even go, you can't look away for a minute. This is pretty Matlock-like, honestly. Someone in the chat is saying better than Matlock. Kind of, actually. Let's listen to this 10 minutes, and at the end, we'll reconvene. Trust me, guys. I know you hear 10 minutes, and you feel like, oh, trust me. Here we go.
In 2010, although they don't refer to Caesar's wife. That requirement is also embedded in the prosecutor's statutory oath, 15-18-2, which requires impartially and without fear or favor discharge my duties as district attorney and take only my lawful compensation, so help me God. The general rule on conflicts of interest for lawyers is in Rule of Professional Conduct 1.7. And we all know, it's all drummed into us, that we cannot have a conflict of interest. And if we do, we have to withdraw or we will be disqualified. The basic idea is that a conflict of interest impairs the lawyer's independent professional judgment. That's the test of a conflict and whether it can be waived and whether it's disqualifying. And that conflict is not just financial. It can be any conflict that impairs your independent professional judgment. And you see that in McLaughlin v. Payne. The court asked what was a personal interest for purposes of disqualification. It's anything that impairs professional judgment. That's reflected in the ABA standards that were quoted by Mr. Merchant, which list the prosecutor's personal, political, financial, professional, business, property, or other interests or relationships. And that's really embedded in the prosecutor's oath to act impartially. And the earlier disqualification order by Judge McBurney was based on political interests, not financial.
I stopped that real quick. I just want to explain something to you in case you missed it. What he's referencing when he says the earlier decision by the other judge, do you remember when it was brought into the record that Fannie Willis had, or there was a contribution by her to another party politically? That was a big controversy way back when, and the judge basically really laid it on her but didn't take any other action. This is a pattern with this woman. It's a pattern, and I just wanted to make sure everybody understood what that was. My bad. I'm sorry for interrupting this gentleman in the middle of his closing arguments. Sort of closing arguments. Here we go.
What my colleagues have described as forensic misconduct is also cognizable as a conflict of interest based on that footnote in the Williams case. The root of all of the problems that we see in this court right now is a conflict of interest arising from their individual personal interests in perpetuating and concealing their relationship. That's the original sin from which all of the other problems flow. There are six different actual conflicts of interest in this case, any one of which warrants disqualification, but collectively, practically compelled. First, the financial conflict that's already been covered. Second, the personal ambition, political ambition. Third, there's a dovetailed or complementary pattern of deceit and concealment of the relationship and the money. Fourth, the speech at the church. Fifth, the motion for protective order that the DA filed in Mr. Wade's divorce case. Sixth, the way the state has conducted the defense of this motion to disqualify, especially the hearing. On the financial piece, the court asked for a limiting principle and asked about materiality. The limiting principle is whatever impairs the independent professional judgment of the lawyer. That is applied routinely. We have a county code section that flatly prohibits gifts from contractors, period. We have, by analogy, the federal bribery statute, which has a threshold of $5,000, 18 U.S.C. 666. The court asked about burdens and inferences. The court can draw a negative inference from the state's failure to produce evidence to support the invisible magic cash balancing theory based on State v. Thomas, 311 Georgia 407, particularly footnote 19. As to the timing question that the court asked about, there were two contracts for Mr. Wade executed after they acknowledged the relationship began. Each one of them afflicted or conflicted under county and common law. The second conflict is her political ambition, for which he was previously chastised by Judge McBurney. And that's also present in this book. The inside flap of this book says that they were given, quote, exclusive access to thousands of secret documents, emails, text messages, and audio recordings. The court has twice denied defense motions to unseal special purpose grand jury materials. She helped herself to get the glory of this book. I introduced certified copies of a number of county code sections. I'm not going to walk through those, but I'll tell you why they matter. The stack of law from the state constitution down to the county ordinances imposes a regime on the DA under which she has three obligations. She has to go to the county commission to get approval to pay him like she did. She cannot accept gifts from a prohibited source. She has to disclose the gifts that she received. She evaded all of those requirements. Section 2-69 of the county code prohibits gifts from prohibited sources, which he was. There is no boyfriend exception. The disclosure forms, the evidence is sufficient for you to find that her disclosure form for 2022 is false and that it is a false writing. That's an actual conflict of interest between her duty, legal duty of disclosure, her legal duty of candor as a prosecutor, and her private and personal interests in concealing the relationship, concealing the gifts, and keeping the gravy train rolling for as long as possible. His part in the pattern of concealment is a story you see in many divorce cases. The husband is hiding things from his wife. How much money he's making, the other woman, and what he's spending on the other woman. And he got on that stand, lied in his interrogatories, and he got on the stand and he lied about lying in the interrogatories. And the lawyers for the DA, the DA's office, they just sat there and let him do it. They did nothing to correct obviously perjured testimony. In and of itself, that warrants disqualification of every one of them. The reason they lied and covered it up was to avoid the trouble they're in right now. That served their personal interests to the detriment of their public duties as prosecutors. The speech at the church, I want to focus on why she did that. Mr. Dillon talked about that. She did it to deflect attention from her own misconduct and that of Mr. Wade. She violated her public duty as a prosecutor to serve her personal interests and the personal interests of her boyfriend. That is a disqualifying conflict between her personal interests and her public duty that is actual, operational, and materialized, and it rests on undisputed facts. The next thing that she did that was a disqualifying conflict of interest was the emergency motion for protective order that she filed in the divorce. I filed a certified copy of that as Exhibit 37. She sought a protective order under the Apex Doctrine on the grounds that she's the DA. The whole filing is expressly predicated on her status as DA. In fact, she never lets you forget it. She says it 27 times in 12 pages. In that filing, speaking as DA, she said, the circumstances, quote, suggest that defendant Joycelyn Wade is using the legal process to harass and embarrass District Attorney Willis, and in doing so is obstructing and interfering with an ongoing criminal investigation. In the prayer for relief on page 11, she asked for 6 months to, quote, complete a review of the filings in the instant case, investigate and depose relevant witnesses with regard to the interference and obstruction this motion contends. There's no sugarcoating it. That's a clear violation of Rule of Professional Conduct 3.4H, which prohibits lawyers from making threats of criminal prosecution to gain advantage in a civil case. She abused her power, she abused her position to threaten her boyfriend's wife with criminal prosecution to gain advantage for herself and her boyfriend in her boyfriend's divorce. She violated her public duties not to make that kind of a threat in order to serve her private personal interests and those of Mr. Wade. Another actual operational conflict. The last category is the conduct of the defense of this hearing. There are a lot of objections made based on attorney-client privilege during Mr. Bradley's testimony. Most of those objections were made by the state. But the privilege being asserted does not belong to the state. It belongs to Mr. Wade. That shows that the DA's office is serving the personal interests of the DA and Mr. Wade in carrying out further concealment and cover-up of their relationship, and not the cause of justice they are sworn to serve. That is a conflict of interest. It's a continuation of the wrongful pattern of concealment and cover-up that they've engaged in since the beginning. But now they've enlisted the entire office in the enterprise. In the written response to the motion to disqualify, they said this, and I quote, "To be absolutely clear, there is no evidence that D.A. Willis derived any financial benefit from Mr. Wade." That's on page 15. Flat out false. 10 lawyers in this case put their name on that, starting with the D.A. So throw another log on the bonfire of conflicts of interest. The problem here is the D.A. cannot distinguish between her personal interests and ambitions on the one hand and her public duties as a prosecutor on the other, and apparently neither can anyone else in their office. Of the 6 conflicts I've identified, only one is subject to a conflict in the evidence. This is a case study in what happens when you operate under a conflict of interest. It's put an irreparable stain on the case. Think of the message that would be sent if they were not disqualified. If this is tolerated, we'll get more of it. This office is a global laughingstock because of their conduct. They should be disqualified and the case should be dismissed.
Ooh. 6 points laid out, and 2 of them I think that other attorneys in the case didn't pay enough attention to. Number 1, what she did when she filed in the divorce case threatening the ex-wife or the wife. Still the wife. Number 2, the privilege argument. The privilege argument. I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. That's why I'm pausing here. But the attorney who was texting back and forth saying that he knew, his law partner, that he knew that this affair started in 2020, way before 2021, way before the case was brought. The state kept objecting to the privilege argument. The state was not that guy's attorney. The state didn't own the privilege. The privilege belonged to Wade. Wade didn't have attorneys there standing up and asserting that privilege. The state was fighting the personal interests of the contractor. Those are two things that everybody had really overlooked. Plus the fact that they brazenly lied. And another attorney that stood up here really went meticulously through her speech at the church that day. We played it where she was basically calling everybody who brought this up a racist, and how using that race and religion to corrupt the jury pool in the case was another instance when she was standing up there reading from a prepared statement she knew she was telling falsities in. The fact that she didn't admit that she had a relationship with him at the time. This was the most masterful 10 minutes, which really was 20, that I sped up. I mean, it was just beautiful. If you listen to that as a judge and you don't do the right thing here, I don't know. But here he is talking about how long it's going to take him to make a decision.
And those aren't ones I can make at this moment. And so I'll be taking the time to make sure that I give this case full consideration is due. I hope to have an answer for everyone within the next 2 weeks. Until that point, if there are any other issues that come up, counsel can reach out and we'll have an order posted on the docket. Thank you all. We're off the record.
And 2 weeks. Something tells me, I don't know, because I've seen very clear-cut examples for judges and with the pressure and the threats and everything else here, I don't know what's going to happen. I know what should happen. I just don't know what is going to happen. And, you know, the judge here made a point in one of the closing arguments that were going on. And he basically said, well, what about every other case they've got if this conflict is here for this one? Unfortunately, yeah, if she's conflicted in these ways for this case, unfortunately, the rest of them are screwed too. It's going to open up a mountain of absolute gobbledygook for Fulton County. She's going to probably need to step down. They're going to have a new election. Reese is asking, but what does this do for Trump's case, or how does this make him innocent? Because someone else will just take this case. No, they won't. There's no case here, Reese. This was ridiculous from the get. There's no case here. What would have to happen in this instance is that another county would have to take up the case and then restart from the very beginning all the way through. And there's not an actual case here, which is why they're so desperately hanging on. They act like it's she's brazenly corrupt, brazenly, outwardly corrupt and entitled. It's not even, I mean, they come up with this theory that she paid in cash. Brazenly corrupt. So we'll keep an eye on that. I watched the closing arguments, the whole hearing. It was really, really actually very good. Supreme Court today releasing a bunch of decisions. They're actually not in. They won't be in chambers to do this. Some of which, one of these rulings could be the decision on whether Colorado can kick former President Trump off the primary ballot. We actually played clips from this hearing on the show as well. Tomorrow is the election, if I'm not mistaken. He's on the ballot as of right now. This decision will, if it goes the way everyone thinks it will, which I think it will allow Trump to remain on the ballot in all states. They're basically taking him off the ballot preemptively using something that hasn't even been found. So Trump is currently set to appear on the state primary ballot on Tuesday after a hold was placed on the Colorado Supreme Court's ruling that deemed him ineligible due to his efforts to defy the 2020 election results. The U.S. Supreme Court held oral arguments on February 8th. We expected this decision a lot sooner. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment says people are not eligible to serve in government if they engaged in insurrection. However, nobody ever found that Donald Trump did engage in insurrection. So it was a great argument if you're a law nerd. Today's not scheduled on the court calendar as a ruling day, so justices won't be in the courtroom to announce any decisions as they normally would be. In the next 4 months, the Supreme Court will resolve a huge number of highly consequential cases, as many as the justices might typically confront across several years. Their decisions will address some of the nation's most pressing issues and influence the course of the presidential election. The most closely watched question, whether Donald Trump is immune from criminal prosecution on charges of trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election. The court's announcement Wednesday that it'll hear the case in late April drew enormous criticism for boosting Trump's efforts to delay his D.C. election obstruction trial until after the election, in which he is the leading Republican candidate. The justices are already grappling with other blockbuster cases that will shape the future of free speech online. That's Monday the 18th, Missouri v. Biden. There's another ruling in front of them on free speech as well, by the way. The power of federal government agencies across to access and access to the most widely used abortion medication. In addition, they have two other cases, one with significant legal and political impacts for Trump. And the high court appears crunched for time, far behind in issuing rulings for cases heard since the start of the term in October. The court has announced just 5 decisions, leaving 92% of argued cases to be formally resolved before the term ends in late June or early July. The Supreme Court is being pulled in more directions than it's capable of being pulled in and is in the middle of just about every significant contemporary public policy, political, and cultural debate. This is actually the reason this is happening is because our courts and our judges have been politicized. And so rather than looking at the Constitution and making rulings, they're actually just making rulings on what their ideology is. Leftist judges rule it contrary to the Constitution. And unfortunately, it's just the truth. Right-wing judges rule on the Constitution. So every time a case of significance goes in front of a liberal appointed justice, it ends up at the SCOTUS for the SCOTUS to hopefully look at the way the framers wrote the Constitution and come to a ruling that honors the Constitution. Some of the buildup is self-inflicted, analysts said, with major issues from past terms like abortion and gun rights resurfacing. In the early weeks of the term, the justices were probably diverted by their efforts to put out the High Court's first code of conduct. And while the justices are accepting fewer cases overall, the ones consuming their time are complicated. The court is also inundated with emergency requests in what is known as the shadow docket, which contributes to the sense that the justices are at the center of every political issue. For example, the same April week the court takes up Trump's immunity claim, the justices will review Idaho's abortion law, which the Biden administration says conflicts with federal law requiring emergency care. And in January, the justices intervened in an immigration battle between the Biden admin and Texas Governor Greg Abbott over razor wire Texas officials installed along a busy stretch of the southern border. And then there's another emergency request from Idaho to clear the way for the state's ban on gender-affirming care for transgender minors. They're very slow, very full. They have a January 6th decision in front of them about the law, the accounting law that was repurposed to keep January 6th defendants in jail. They're very, very far behind. I'm putting this well done article in the show notes for everyone today. For those of you who don't know, the show notes, if you're listening to podcast, are below your episode. If you're watching this, the show notes shall be available shortly after the show on Rumble in the description box of the video. So the SCOTUS is super busy. And I just wanted to bring this to everybody's attention, not the meat at the top of the page here, which is beautiful. But Nikki Haley beats Donald Trump for the very first time in D.C. Republican primary. What could be her only win heading into Super Tuesday? I just want to say something here, okay? She won with 2,000... Well, hold on. What was it? She had like 2,000 votes. Donald Trump had like 900. I just want to point something out to everybody that is not what everybody's talking about. First of all, there are probably like 20,000 Republicans in D.C. if there's a 10% turnout. I don't know the exact number. And Nikki Haley won D.C., the swamp, the literal swamp where everybody hates real, actual truth, justice in the American way. The problem here that nobody's paying attention to, and I think that maybe is sad and might, I'll go into a case in a second that you guys might be interested in. These are the jury pool for anybody who sits in a DC jury against any J6 defendant, political persecution. This is the jury pool. They despise President Trump. The Republicans that are there despise President Trump. All of the rest of the city despises President Trump. By extension, there is no way to get a fair trial in D.C. There's just no way. If I were an attorney, I would be now using these results as further evidence that the jury pool is completely biased in D.C. And there is a case right now that is arguing change of venue because of this very reason by one J6 defendant who wants to move the case out, who showed a very substantial bias using evidence in the DC area and is hoping to get the case moved out of DC. I think that if the case is moved out of DC, we're going to see a wave of that happen and a lot better results, fairer results. Speaking of which, people being persecuted for J6. Steve Baker turned himself in on Friday. Here he is right afterwards.
I probably don't have a lot to say right now. I need to process for a little while. I'm actually still shaking a little bit. I don't like what I just went through. I don't like the deliberate humiliation that they put me through. There was no reason to do that. There was no reason to march me into a courtroom in leg chains today. There was somebody there answering for a felony, and they weren't in chains. My charges are misdemeanors. It's just, it's mind-boggling. But that is, unfortunately, the type of selective persecution that January 6th defendants are facing. And ultimately, what we are looking at here, and probably the only reason that many of the January 6th defendants have had to go through what they've had to go through, is because of what I've talked about so many times and what I've written about so many times. It's called scary words. It doesn't matter if it's Stuart Rhodes. It doesn't matter if it's the grandmother who chanted USA, USA in the Capitol. It's the scary words that were said. If you don't say the right thing at the right time and comport to the right narrative, that's what they're going to do, is they're going to come after us, and that's exactly what's happened. These charges have nothing to do with my behavior at the Capitol. These charges are reflective of what I said before and after. My speech, what I thought about things, what I joked about. That's what this is reflective of. And so that's what we're up against right now. We're not quite Canada yet, you know. We don't have Pierre Trudeau wanting to put people in prison for life for hate speech. But this is the beginnings if we don't stand up against it.
And it's true. What he's saying is true. They detained him, transported him into a courthouse in handcuffs, a belly chain, and foot shackles to face 4 nonviolent misdemeanor counts for being in the United States Capitol. And if you read it, it's something else. The way that this is being covered by other journalists is, they're not journalists. They're IC hacks. IC hacks is what they are. Steve Friend points it out here. Ryan J. Riley, one of the journalists, quote, who's been covering J6 for Legacy Press. And if I'm not mistaken, he was one of the people that has been in I was in the Enrique Tarrio space when Enrique was there waiting for sentencing or waiting for his verdict. I'm not sure which one it was. And I was on the stage. Cara Castronova ran that space for the Gateway Pundit. And I was on the stage in that space. And I believe Ryan was there, and so was Julie Kelly. And if I'm not mistaken, Julie Kelly was saying, you know, this is one of the only journalists that's covering the trials and blah, blah, blah. This guy is a hack, musician and libertarian writer who works for The Blaze. Now, they can't say if the government were to call Steve Baker a journalist in its pleadings, the courts would probably look on this a lot differently. So they don't. They call him everything they could possibly figure out to call him but a journalist. And Ryan Riley writes this entire piece, taking a dump all over his character, the things he said, his opinions. You cannot go to jail for your damn opinions in the United States of America. It's terrible what's happening. But there's hope. This gentleman drove all the way to support Steve. His name is Dan. And if you want really amazing coverage of this entire thing, definitely go check out Brianna Morello, who's been on top of it. She's sending me everything that she wants me to help her share. She's done a great job of this. But here he is right afterwards. Listening to this made me cringe because of how... Listen to this.
How are you feeling? Because that was a lot to take on.
You know, I if I'm being honest, I don't feel good right now.
Yeah.
I'm still processing the humiliation that I just was put through.
Yeah.
And it's the most humiliated I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
And it's for
doing something that I believe that I was supposed to be doing back 3 years ago on January 6th. And so the fact that I'm, you know, I was put in leg chains today is something I never dreamed would ever happen to me. And to be honest with you, it's not for things I said or did. It's for things I said.
Yeah.
You know, words that I said before or after or whatever. Because that's what they're after. They're after to suppress our speech. And I really don't know how to express myself in the way I want to yet. I'm going to have to process it. It's something I'm going to have to think about for 24 hours, you know.
Yeah.
And then do what I do is write it all down. And then I'll know what to say and what to tell the world, you know.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. I actually had someone underneath a comment I made about how Steve Baker is standing up for all journalists right now. He's going through this, hopefully, with a positive outcome for him. And someone said, well, he never talked about Julian Assange. And I just wanted to make a point about that. Julian Assange is a persecuted journalist. But the problem with Julian Assange is that, well, first of all, it's a different situation entirely. He's not an American citizen. But outside of that, do I believe he should be languishing away in a jail right now, waiting extradition to the United States for charges of espionage? No. I will tell you what hurts Julian Assange more than anything else. His activists and supporters that go in the comment section of anything else that is not pertaining to Julian Assange and verbally assault the people that are talking about those other things. Your followers can hurt your cause even if they think they're being noble. Like, this had nothing to do with Julian Assange. Well, he didn't stand up for Julian Assange, so I'm not really sure. Well, then fine, you do you. I'm going to do me. This is an American journalist who was covering the events of the day. The video record shows that. And I believe that he will be exonerated with the very video that he has fought valiantly to have released for the past 3 years. And Steve Friend actually alludes to this. The Suspendables have adopted Baker, which I think is awesome. The criminal complaint used to charge him is signed by FBI Special Agent Craig Noyes, registered Democrat and good German. Craig writes, your affiant submits there is also probable cause to believe that Baker violated 40 U.S.C. 5014E2, which makes it a crime to willfully and knowingly utter loud, threatening, or abusive language or engage in disorderly or disruptive conduct at any place in the grounds or in any of the Capitol buildings with the intent to impede, disrupt, or disturb the orderly conduct of a session of Congress. The Capitol CCTV video to prove otherwise is coming out, and I can't wait to share it. Noyes, nor the Justice Department will get by with these lies. He is clearly, in some of the video I've seen, he is clearly standing back with his camera, taking photos, filming. He is not engaged in any disorderly conduct or disruption. He is standing back against the wall, hiding in a corner, basically, not moving with the crowd, documenting what's going on. This man, Steve Baker, wasn't even a Trump supporter. He's a libertarian. I don't think there's any better person than a libertarian to fight this fight. The press isn't... this is going to be something to watch unfold. And I will be following it for everybody because... And again, follow Brianna Morello on socials. She's doing a fantastic job. Keep your eyes peeled on Kyle and Steve and Garrett and George Hill. And we're going to say a prayer for Steve, pray for him. He's got the blaze behind him. That's a huge plus. And we are going to make sure that we see this through. And this case will also end up in front of the Supreme Court, I'm sure, the SCOTUS. Say what you want. I'm not 100% a fan of every conservative justice sitting on the court right now, but at least we've got them there. And that's why you're starting to see the left's court packing talk pick up significantly. because the major issues of our time, as discussed earlier in the show, are sitting in front of that court right now for them to decide. For them to decide. So, with that all being said, the Legal Eagle portion of the show getting out of the way, we're going to move to culture. Aren't you so excited? I have a lot to talk about with culture today. We're going to start here. This is from Libs of TikTok, another one who's being persecuted right now. This is a lefty talking about the movie for Cabrini, the true story of her journey as an immigrant to America. It is produced by the people who produced The Sound of Freedom, Angel Studios, who also produced After Death, which if you haven't seen, please watch. That movie was such a beautiful film. They have a lot of great movies. You should go over there and sign up. But let's just listen to what she has to say.
I was walking past the movie theater and I stopped because I saw this poster. And I was like, wow, are they making a movie about Mother Cabrini? She's one of my favorites. Now, once I got home, I went to look this movie up. And what I had originally missed is this right here, the director of Sound of Freedom. Now, here's the thing. If you're not familiar with that movie, that is a QAnon human trafficking movie. Now, I admit I have not seen Sound of Freedom, mostly because I am deeply uninterested in watching anything even remotely associated with QAnon.
It's not associated with QAnon. Human trafficking exists. It happens. This is this woman, this idiot with her big wide-rimmed glasses. I find that most of what comes out, it's just uninformed nonsense, and it's frustrating.
I really don't understand why these QAnon folks feel the need, and really this is something that I see coming up with the kind of like Tradcath conversation is
Tradcath.
It just shows a deep misunderstanding of Mother Cabrini and other saints like her, right? She's the patron saint of immigrants. She comes over in the 19th century from Italy to America specifically to provide social services to people who do not have them, right? There is a long legacy with many Catholic saints that are about social justice. That's her whole deal.
It's called charity.
And that's a lot of Catholic saints deal. And I find it really disconcerting and really ignorant to be taking the image of this woman who is specifically...
She knows nothing about what this movie is going to be. She didn't even see the other movie. And she's an authority to tell people who's ignorant or not. So that's what we're dealing with. But I want to move on to something else. Men, women in the chat. There is this trend going around where women are posting videos like this. Let's listen.
I look like trash right now. No makeup other than just tinted sunscreen and the like bronzer drops. Sun is not good, but I want to know, how old do I look? Everybody's doing this, and I just want to know. I genuinely love commenting on these because I feel like people could look any age in a range, truly. I think people between like 25 to 35, like you could be any of those ages, even some people like up to 40. So how old do I look? I look like...
Okay, first of all, woman, I have no makeup on except tinted moisturizer and bronzer. That's going to change your entire face. I have tinted moisturizer on right now. Changes my entire face. Okay. I have an issue with this because there's a deep-seated need by people to be validated by others. And no matter what the answer comes out in this, whether they guess her age or not, she's either going to complain and become a victim, or she's going to feel better about herself based on what someone else says about herself. Now, I know it's easy to get sucked into that. I mean, everybody, right? Everybody cares about what people think about how they look. Look what happens. And the over-exaggerated hand talking by people is really getting annoying. This, I am Italian from New York, okay? And I don't even do this over and over. Like, guys, This is a hand puppet, not a way. This is an Italian FU, okay? This is an Italian FU. This is a hand puppet. Here we go. Just wait. Why does it always default to low volume? Listen, here's her response. Here.
48. I look 48. I look 48. I'm gonna be honest, like, I don't think I'm delusional about this, but I think there is no way I look 48. 48. I am 34.
Mm.
This is not what a 48-year-old looks like. And if it is, please someone correct me. Like, maybe if you have tons and tons of money. I certainly won't look like this when I am 48 as a regular, normal person that's not a celebrity. 48. Look, I know I have under eye bags, and I know I have, like, lines around my mouth, but, like, 48?
Are you upset? Are you upset? Well, listen, lady, unfortunately, we've got this going on. I want everybody who can see this right now to guess how old this girl is.
Respectfully, you look like you're pushing 45. Stop getting filler or Botox, whatever you have. It looks so bad.
And this weird S that all these women do, like, just be real. What happened to being real? Why are these people? I feel, a good portion of my soul feels really bad for these people. How unin touch, like, with your spiritual self do you have to be to have to do stuff like this? Just listen to what she says here.
45? I get, like, okay, maybe, like, late 20s, 30s. 22, yeah. Shocker.
She's 22.
When I...
Look at her face. She is so insecure. She has puffed her face up with more filler than a 45-year-old Real Housewife, okay? She was probably absolutely stunning before she did this to herself. She did this to herself to seek the validation of others. And that's because she's not in touch with herself. And it makes me sad.
I first started TikTok and started making filler videos, like, come get filler with me or Botox. I used to get these hate comments all the time.
Her lips don't even fit on her face anymore. And I'm not making fun of her.
There's just people on TikTok that absolutely hate cosmetic procedures and believe that you shouldn't get them. And again, I think it's a personal preference. Like, if I want to get filler, I feel like no one should stop you from getting...
No, no one should stop you. And no one did stop you. You went out and got filler. You did. And then you solicited the opinions of everybody on the internet about how old you look. And someone said, respectfully, you look like you're pushing 45. Because that's what they felt. Now, there's another side of this that's even more sad. This woman asked how old...
She's right.
How old she looked. And I want you to listen to her response. Just listen. I'm going to play the whole thing.
She's right. Most people did guess over 50. And I have gotten so many hateful comments. I disclosed that I'm 38, but yet tons of people came on to my comment thread to say that, wow, must have been a rough life, and no way you're 38. Just lots of stuff like that. So it's 5:30 in the morning, and I have maybe gathered an hour or two of sleep throughout the night. I finally just got out of bed because I was just torturing myself laying there.
So this woman decided she was going to ask the internet how old she looked. And the internet responded that she looked over 50. And now she can't sleep. I don't know what she expected. Now she's talking about all the evil comments in her comment section. Now she's clearly very upset. But it is going to cause a flood of people to see how upset she is and comment how she's actually not looking like she's 50, how she shouldn't care what other people think. And then she's going to feel validated in her victimhood because she asked in the first place. We're getting there. Just bear with me. Listen to this.
So this is a little PSA to all the ladies out there. don't try the trend. I really honestly don't think I look like I'm in my 50s.
That's all that matters, lady.
But apparently I do. And I'm definitely going to be having some work done. So it starts on Tuesday with my hair.
I'm like, okay, you can get your hair done. I mean, that always makes people feel a little bit better about themselves if they get their hair done right.
And I'm going to call and make an appointment for some lip filler because I got a lot of comments about my, yes, almost non-existent upper lip.
What? This is not the only one like this I've seen. Here.
But these are just my genetics. I don't have any Botox, any fillers. I do take care of my skin, but I still break out. I use tretinoin, and I'm actually an esthetician. So I think that's the part of this.
No, lady. No. Listen, to everyone out there, and I'm going to open up the phone lines for people. We have a society of people that are walking around and they are not happy with themselves inside or out. They are disconnected from their spiritual self. If you truly care that much about what other people think about how you look, that you are going to go out and get foreign substances injected into your face to make some anonymous person out on the internet happy, there is a much bigger problem going on than just how you look. And it starts in your heart and your soul. You need to find that connection and you need to find it fast. Because until you do, nothing you do to your face or your body is going to change how you feel about yourself. I have been in a place where I cared that much about what people thought about how I looked. And it's when you reconnect with God that you change that perspective, in my opinion, in a very strong way. And I don't care what you think I look like. I really don't. I don't. Now, granted, if I could, I've sat here in front of you with literally not a stitch of makeup on my face and done the show on video. And I never really wanted to make anything that I did video or picture. I do not need to put a picture of myself on the internet wearing something skimpy or, you know, whatever, to make people like me or say how pretty I am or whatever, to make what I have to say or what I'm doing any more valuable than anyone else. But that's where we are. We have a society of people running around disconnected from God who are trying to inject themselves with lip filler to make random people who would never say this to you in person, because we have a conscience and a heart and a soul in our body, and most people would never walk up to that woman and guess 50. If she asked that question in a crowded room, probably nobody would answer because they would be afraid of offending her. But we're on the internet, people, the big wild west of the internet, where you're going to get people telling you you look like you're... And what's wrong with looking like you're 50? What's wrong with it? The only thing I care about is that when I open my eyes in the morning and I turn over, my husband's laying there. Every morning he tells me he thinks that I'm beautiful. And that's all that matters to me, truthfully. And then I look in the mirror, like I was talking about on the pre-show, and I have crow's feet. You see? I have crow's feet. I'm going to make it big. You see? Crow's feet. I have bags under my eyes. You could see it if I turn my head. You see it? Bags under my eyes, crow's feet. My crow's feet mean that I laughed my ass off my entire life and I was full of joy. My bags under my eyes are something that God gifted me when I was born. They've never gone away. They've always been there. I used to be so self-conscious of the stretch marks on my stomach. The stretch marks on my stomach are there because I birthed two amazing children. I take care of my body. I feed it. I nourish it. I take care of my temple. And I take care of my connection with God, and nothing else matters. I know this sounds cliche and stupid, but I feel terrible for this woman who's now going to go out and get plastic surgery and feels ugly because she's seeking the validation of those outside of herself instead of seeking the validation of God and her spirit and her soul. I want to have smile lines because it means I led a joyful life. I want the wrinkles on the side of my eyes because it means that I've laughed and loved. It's just very sad that we have so many women out there so lost, unable to find themselves, that they feel like this is the way for them to go. I think she's beautiful. She's troubled and she's sad. You can see it in her eyes. She's very sad and she's very troubled about this and probably many, many other things. Connect to your heart again, ma'am. Don't get your lips filled. Your lips are the way that God created them. You have beautiful blue eyes. You have a beautiful smile, I'm sure. It's very sad. And that's how we're going to end the show today. God bless all of you guys. I had a lot more, but we don't have time. Share this with your friends. Say a prayer. Spend some time in prayer today. Reconnect with God. I think if more of us did that, we would not have these scenarios happening. I'm not shitting on this woman. I truly feel for her and wish I could give her a big hug. But I cannot convince her she's beautiful. She needs to see it for herself. And she is definitely not going to see it this way. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, streaming live at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on the beautiful platform Rumble, X, and also on Getter. Please make sure you listen to the audio podcast 2:30 on all the audio platforms. Share this out with your friends if you find it valuable. And we will be back on Wednesday. God bless you all.